All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the For the Sake of Search, a search series about all things search from infrastructure all the way to search relevance. I'll be your host today. I'm David. I am former developer advocate for OpenSearch and currently building search at GitHub. So I wanted to start this show as just kind of a unopinionated survey of search and the search landscape. I wanted to create this while I was still working at OpenSearch, but it just didn't feel right because I was like, oh, you know, everything I'm going to talk about is going to be OpenSearch related. And I feel like this is the perfect first episode because I have with me Philippe from ParadeDB, who is building search on Postgres. So Philippe, will you go ahead and introduce yourself and ParadeDB?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's nice to be on it. Yeah, I'm one of the founders of ParadeDB. We are an open source company building full text search in Postgres. So Postgres has full text search, as many people know, but it doesn't have full text search to the level of feature set and performance that something like OpenSearch or Elasticsearch will have. And so we're bridging the gap for those people. We add features like BF25 indexing, tokenization in multiple languages, facets or search aggregations, so on and so forth to Postgres to give people the ability to do more with their existing Postgres deployments.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one that's really interesting. And we had talked actually a little bit before the call. And, you know, why is it, do you feel like that Postgres didn't include BM25 search? I think they're using, what is it called? Cover density, which is a very strange algorithm.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll be honest, I didn't know for an embarrassingly long amount of time, despite working on BM25 and Postgres, because we're taking a pretty different approach, and I'm happy to talk about that. But my understanding is it's hard to do BM25 ranking when you take the context of Postgres databases being perhaps distributed or things like that. And so they went with a simpler algorithm that makes it easier to have, like actually implement in the context of all the use case that people might make with Postgres. And we at ParadeDB are building BM25 and Postgres in a slightly different way, which kind of allows us to circumvent some of that. But I don't think that would really make sense in the context of like core Postgres.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you take us through like where did ParadeDB come from? Like, where did you guys get started with? How did you get into search on Postgres?
Good question. The truth is we came at it from a pretty first principle thinking, I would say. So me and my co-founder at Parade about a year ago, we were working on supply chain software actually in Europe. And we were using Postgres, of course, and we also needed to do some user-facing search type experiences, and we're using Elasticsearch in that context. And, you know, however wonderful Elastic is, we were just two people, right? And running complex ETLs between the two and managing OpenSearch, which we weren't super familiar with, it started to be a bit cumbersome. We then joined Y Combinator in summer of 2023 and went around asking people. And turns out that frustration was somewhat common with the people that we talked to. And that got us interested in peering a little bit more in Postgres. We weren't super familiar aside from being users. And we realized we thought we could make something that would kind of solve our problem and solve the problem of those other people that we talked to. And that got us started into working on it. So we started in August of last year. It's about a year old company now. And we were quite new to search and to both search and Postgres when we started. But when you build a company on it, you learn quite fast.
You kind of have to. I think that's fantastic, though, because I think this highlights a really big fact, and that is that Elasticsearch and OpenSearch are really heavy. They're big tools. They're wonderful because they have all these bells, whistles, features, scaling, etc. But if you have to support two separate systems for search, that's bad UX or hard UX. I'm not going to say bad. You know, people are doing it and it makes sense. But I've definitely experienced that where, you know, you're like, okay, the document was updated here. And then, you know, several seconds to maybe a minute later, it's up to date and available on all your replicas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and can we talk a little bit then about like who is using it? Of course, it's Postgres users, but like, do you have like specific niche that you guys feel like you fill really well? Is it, you know, Fortune 500? Is it small companies? Like, where do you guys fit there?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a few industries that I've really, really hit at home. Observability software is a common one. Sales automation software is another common one we've seen. Financial technology is another pretty common one. And then I would say e-commerce is another big one that we've been serving. Of course, Postgres is very wide and search is very wide. So we actually have people from any types of industries that are using the product. But those are really the four that surface at the top. We tend to skew towards slightly larger company, I would say. So when we started Parade, me and my co-founder, we saw it as something that was easier to run for small teams and kind of thought, thought the product would be mostly useful for like mid-market or smaller organizations. What we found is the need to improve full-text search on Postgres starts to become prevalent when you have a certain amount of data. Before that, the native full-text search in Postgres is still quite good. And so we typically see around 500 gigabytes in index data starts to be the time where ParadeDB is a lot preferred over just doing things regularly in Postgres. And then we have customers in the terabytes and terabytes that also work with us. If you have an update-heavy workload, for example, you have a big need for real-time search and you're constantly ingesting data from your Postgres, because ParadeDB doesn't need any ETL pipeline, it also is Postgres, so updates are a bit faster than in a document model like Elastic, you tend to have better performance. And so irrespective of size, those are kind of use cases where we have even quite large, like some Fortune 500 customers that use the product for those reasons.
I think that's amazing. And I think that kind of brings a really interesting point is, you know, even with like really large indexes, search databases are really fast. It's like, it's actually ridiculously surprising. I mean, you know, I've seen people getting, you know, hundreds or thousands of queries per second on solutions kind of like this, which is amazing, you know, and search document sets tend to be on the smaller side of things, you know, especially like in e-commerce, unless you're like Amazon, you only have so many documents in your e-commerce store. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the performance is pretty good. That's kind of so we're in an interesting position because people know search and they know they want it. Also, when your search is not performing very well, you can tell very quickly, right? Search is one of the primary interfaces with which users will use a product. And so it's very, very quick to become a top priority. So oftentimes we actually get customers come to us from inbound who message us and they say, hey, we are facing issue XYZ, like, you know, our ETL pipeline is too cumbersome, or we need faster real-time search than what synchronizing with Elastic might give us. And or sometimes they're just like, hey, Elastic is too big for us and doesn't make sense. And they kind of know they want it, but their primary concern when they come to hear about ParadeDB is we're a one-year-old company. They're like, does it work well, right?
Yeah.
Does it work well enough? Is the performance good enough? And Elastic, you know, Elastic has its own set of, you know, challenges and trade-offs, but it's very good. It's known for being very performant. It has a distributed architecture. ParadeDB today is single node. We don't do distributed yet. And people's primary question is just like, does it work well, right? The answer is yes. Like we, you know, it works quite well. We have really, really fast search queries. Many of them, you know, most of them, I would say actually faster than Elastic on single nodes. Obviously, if you need a distributed architecture, we're perhaps too immature of a product for that, but it's quite rare actually today that people have so much data they need that. As you say, it's kind of scoped, right?
Yeah.
And when you scope it, like search databases are really, really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this also brings a really good point because I've seen this, you know, a lot of people will do like, oh yeah, I compared, you know, this tiny in-memory library for search against Elasticsearch and we outperformed it. And it's like, of course you did. Elastic is not inherently super fast because, you know, there's a lot of complexity in adding replication, adding routing, adding all of these different things. And if your data set doesn't need that, then, you know, you're going to be faster. And I think that's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, search especially, right? You're briefly mentioning relevance, tuning, and so on. Like search is, it's not a buy and done product. So ParadDB ships with a same set of defaults, right? So does Elastic and so on. And so if you just download our Docker image and you start running queries with our quick start, you'll quickly be able to get something good. But if when you want to integrate it with your own product, make sure it works with your data set and so on, there is some amount of reflection that needs to come, and we try our best to make it as easy as possible. But as you say, when you're doing this at scale, you want to make sure you have some other considerations. And so, I feel like the software industry is filled with people that say, like, how come Facebook has 10,000 people working there? I could build Facebook in a weekend, right? Or like my vector database NumPy array is faster than whatever is the top right now, right? I built it in 2 hours. Like, yes, of course you can do proof of concept very quickly, but the devil's in the detail, right? And when you want to try to tailor to a wide range of workloads, there's some considerations that need to be made. So ParadDB tries to strike a balance to that. But yeah, it's cool that people can go and make things really fast, really quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think also you said one other thing that I wanted to like double click on, and that is that a lot of times it's the larger organizations that are coming to you. And I think that speaks a lot to like search maturity at an organization, right? A larger organization is going to have the tools to say, hey, we know our search is bad. we know we're not getting the responses because maybe our click-through rate's rough, or we've got observability and we could say, hey, this is taking 500 milliseconds or a second to return a search. And they're like, okay, we know this is bad, which is one of the nice things there. And I think a challenge of a lot of smaller shops.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's also a question of priorities, right? Yeah. For a lot of smaller companies, they have higher priorities than optimizing these things, but at scale, it starts to be a pretty big problem. So all this to say, we mostly service, I would say, like mid-market to larger companies for the most part, but we have a ton of startups that still use ParadDB, and we're open source. They use it, startups typically use it for free. They have somewhat more scope needs and so on. And so it's kind of our way to try to give back to the people that I guess we were a year ago when we came to wanting to do this for ourselves in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you just touched on licensing, and I know you guys have a really special story around that. So can you tell us a little bit about how ParadDB is licensed, why you went with that license, and your kind of monetization strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So ParadDB is open source, or open core, I should say. So we have some closed source features. The vast majority are open source. We're licensed AGPL 3.0. We actually have a blog post written. So if you go to blog.paradb.com, you can see our blog post titled Why We Picked AGPL. And you can read that in detail if you're interested in learning a bit more. But we picked AGPL because we wanted to be a true open source company. But we wanted to make sure that we could defend our work in some case from larger organization. So ParadDB is shipped as a Postgres extension. What this means is it's compatible with every single Postgres database. We don't fork Postgres. We don't make any modifications that are not backwards compatible with Postgres and so on. That means it's very easy to adopt. So for a lot of people will install the extension directly in their self-hosted databases, or they will connect them to an existing Postgres managed database like Amazon RDS or something like that via logical replication. This is wonderful because it makes it easier for us to scope our work and build it, even though we're a small team and working with Postgres is difficult. And it also makes it easier for customers to adopt. Like, they know that it's going to work. They don't have to worry about anything. What this means, though, is in order for us to build a successful product that we can give to as many people as possible, we need it to be sustainable. And we wanted to do two things. We wanted to avoid proprietary forks. We've had a lot of companies actually reach out to us and ask to fork it proprietary. And the AGPL license prevents this with the copyleft clause, which we think is better for the open source community. It means you can go to the ParadDB repo and this is the state of the art for ParadDB. There's not like a different version somewhere that someone else is working on. Like, everything goes back to the whole community. And the second thing is it means, well, it's an open source license. Anyone can use it. You can use it as your organization. You don't need to pay us. But it also means because it can be forked easily by our private organizations, it's not going to be hosted on competitive products to us in a predatory way. that's important for us so that we can invest as much as possible behind the product and try to get it to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's super important. You know, I know a lot of people have trust issues right now. You know, we've seen Redis with their license change. We saw Elasticsearch with their license change. And also with both Redis and Elasticsearch, I think this was one of the challenges was they use their own proprietary license. So now every business's legal team is like, can we adopt this? Can we still use this? Are we a supported use case? Which is why AGPL seems really attractive because it's well known. It's been around for years.
Exactly, exactly. And we touched on this in the blog post, like Elastic and Redis, for example, in my opinion, you know, they went with the with a very permissive license like Apache 2.0. But the truth is they're trying to build businesses, right? And so there's always a financial aspect associated with it. And eventually they realized like their perhaps their success has gotten so big that there were other parties interested and they decided to do an overcorrection, create their own license, things like that. That alienates customers, right? When you go and you use or contribute to a product, you follow the license, right? There are some people that choose not to adopt certain products because of their license. And when the license changes, it almost feels like, you know, we pass a quick one, you know, you got passed a quick one by you, like you were told a false promise. And so we wanted to make sure we would never need to relicense. And the AGPL, I think, is good for that. Most companies that do AGPL never relicense. You can look at Minayo and Grafana and Citus in the Postgres world that are good examples of this that have done it well. And as you say, our users are software engineers, right? They're not lawyers. Yeah. And we don't want people to need to go and read like foreign legal documents to decide whether they can adopt the software. It should be something that's known and tested.
Yeah, absolutely. And it draws a nice line for your community as well. You know, like I know I had a lot of people that I would talk about with the Elasticsearch particularly because it was a little bit close to my heart being working at OpenSearch. But but yeah, you know, people had contributed and, you know, their contributions were no longer there, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which with the AGPL, you know, I know that if I go and contribute, I will be able to take advantage of that for, you know, the use cases specified. So it really creates a nice clean line.
Yeah, exactly. That's important to us. We just want to be very transparent with people, right? Because we've been in that position before as developers. I got burned by license changes and we just want to be very transparent. Like what we tell you should hold over time, right? So your decisions don't feel like they got taken from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So could you tell us, like, we've talked about the open source side. What does the monetized side look like for you guys? What sort of features are you providing over there?
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. So almost everything is open source. To be honest, our goal is for any individual developer to be able to go and build wonderful search experiences off of the open source version of Parade. But if you're looking to do things at really, really big scale, at that point, you start to get into more of the enterprise world. And in order for us to give the features for free to the community, we need someone to pay us. And typically bigger enterprises are able to do that. So it's typically things around that. So for example, performance, like very high performance optimizations are done more in the enterprise closed source. We have features like faster aggregation, for example, that are or faster, like faceted search that we found is like, we basically only had enterprises request this feature. So we put it in the closed source. We have things like weak consistency in our indexing scheme, which is also a closed source feature. I'm happy to talk about that, but that mostly enables you to have faster ingestion patterns inside ParadeDB. This is not really relevant to sort of more individual developers or smaller organizations, typically things like that we do. And then our monetization is twofold. We have companies that come to us and just ask for a commercial license, and they will go and use it directly within their own environment. And we're also coming up with a hosted solution of sort for ParadeDB. It's a little bit different than the standard wisdom with it, which is instead of running the compute for customers, we're building a bring your own cloud model. So customers will run the ParadeDB instance within their own Amazon account or Google Cloud account and whatnot. But the lifecycle and the maintenance and the support will be handled by our team. And we see this as the best of both worlds for our customers. Because ParadeDB is Postgres, we want it to be close to your existing Postgres database. We're not trying to replace people's Postgres databases. We're just trying to give you another one for search. we want to make sure we can deploy in your existing environment.
Yeah.
And then we charge for that service in the same way that, you know, a hosted solution for any product would charge.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And also, especially because you guys are, you know, attaching yourself to Postgres, I imagine it would be very hard to say, hey, migrate your entire Postgres, you know, to our cloud. It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. We don't migrate people's Postgreses. Yeah. In some ways, we more so migrate their Elastic or their OpenSearch cluster.
Yeah. Ouch. No, just kidding.
I'm sorry.
No. It's fantastic though. Really. Actually, I think this is the thing. And this is one of the things I actually almost wrote a really not super kind article about the state of search in Postgres. And I started like posting on Twitter and I was like, you know, like, man, Postgres search, this just feels wrong. It feels bad. And people kept pointing out like, hey, you know, Postgres is being maintained by like 7 people. And the way that they the way they go about these things is they provide, you know, the base functionality that people build on top of. And I really appreciate that method because, you know, it allows companies like you to come in and provide solutions. And even more so just allows Postgres to just stay Postgres. You know, it shouldn't be mutated or fandangled so much.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons. Like if you go around and you talk to people about Postgres, everyone loves it. I got to be honest. I mean, obviously, you know, I look around in the Postgres world, but and I go around the Postgres world, but I had very, very few people, you know, tell me that they don't like it. And that's because the core maintainers are extremely, extremely diligent. What happened with MySQL, unfortunately, is it kind of got bought for commercial interest, right? And because Postgres is in this sort of neutral territory, and even if you're a big company, it's very, very hard to convince the maintainers to merge a patch unless like there's true like intellectual reasons for it, right? Not commercial reason. That's what has made Postgres so successful. And I really hope it can continue to go that way. And it leaves room for people like ourselves, right? To say, hey, we'll take the foundation. So if you want it for search, like we can do better than what the foundation has given us, but it's going to be for the specific use case, right? And so like I was mentioning when we were talking about BM25, ParadeDB is built slightly different than if you were to build BM25 in core Postgres would be. That allows us to do this really, really well, but it also means like ParadeDB should be used for your search and analytics need. It shouldn't be used for your primary Postgres need, right? And that's a trade-off we're willing to make because that's the use case we service to customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to kind of go back to something you mentioned earlier. You seemed really interested to talk about that weak consistency model. And like, what does that look like? What does that mean for search?
Sure. So in databases, right, you have the concept of consistency or atomicity in the transactions, right? So you want to make sure that if something gets inserted into the database, when the database tells you, yes, it was inserted, you know that's true, right? Or if there's an error that happens in the process of inserting the data or modifying the data, then the whole transaction gets reverted back. So you're not in this sort of half in between state where you don't really know like, hey, is my, you know, I tried to write this row in my Postgres database, is the row there or not, right? You want to always know for sure. And that's a concept called atomicity. When indices, like search indices are built in Postgres, they are built on top of a Postgres table. So in the context of ParadeDB, you might have a table with, say, your product catalog at your e-commerce company, right? So every time a new catalog comes in, a new item comes in, a new row gets inserted. Or if a customer purchases a product, you will reduce the inventory column count by one, right? Because you have one fewer of that item. Then when you use ParadeDB, you create a search index on top of this. And as modifications happen to your catalog table, the index will get automatically updated. So if you add a new row, we will only re-index that row. That allows us to give you this real-time search feature that's very, very performant. Now, what this means is in order to have atomicity in that situation, we wait until the new data has been indexed in the search index before confirming your Postgres transactions. So it adds a bit of overhead. So if you, before using ParadeDB, you would say, hey, I want to insert, you know, blue t-shirt quantity 10 in my inventory table. And that was that. Now we say, I want to insert blue t-shirt, you know, inventory 10, and I want it to be tokenized in my search index so it can be exposed to customers. That's very quick. It's a matter of a few milliseconds overhead in most cases, unless you make bulk uploads. But it does add overhead. So if you are in a use case where you're consistently updating and updating and updating, it might make your transactions a bit slower. And for customers, that for most customers, that's what they want, because they want to make sure that if the data is in the database, it can be searchable right away.
Yeah,
that's what we call strong consistency, right? So yep. You always have consistency between like the data that can be accessed and what's actually the state of your database. Another concept is called weak consistency, where we could say, hey, instead of waiting for Postgres to say, yeah, the data was inserted, instead of waiting for it to be indexed by the BM25 index, we say, hey, as soon as it's in the table, we call it inserted, and we trust that the BM25 index will do its job in the background. And maybe if a user were to search, you know, within that 1 second gap between the two, they might not find it, but for whatever reason, that might be okay. And one of the reasons why this is useful is if you're ingesting a lot of data, this will allow you to ingest data much faster into QueryDB. So if you have, let's say, like the logging use case, which is a very common one with Elastic or with OpenSearch, when people ingest logs, they get generated in very, very high volume, and typically they don't need to be accessed right away, right? So it's okay for it to be able to ingest faster, but only be searchable within a matter of a few seconds later. That's a type of what we call weak consistency. And that's something that we offer for enterprise customers, because they may be willing, they may want to like toggle the consistency model depending on the use case that they have.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense, especially, you know, with, we were talking about, you know, people with up to a terabyte of data. If you're making, you know, batch updates on that, you don't necessarily want to couple, because I think this also speaks to how most people build with, you know, Elasticsearch, OpenSearch, Solr, Vespa. It's more often than not, you can rebuild your search indexes. And by the way, I'm just going to throw this out there. If anyone is using Elasticsearch or OpenSearch as a primary database, please stop. Yeah. And for that exact reason. No, yeah, it's not good, because, you know, they don't provide that strong consistency that you'd necessarily want in a primary database. So it makes a lot of sense why you'd want to decouple that, and especially on the enterprise side. Like my little small, you know, homebrew project, okay, yeah, sure, I can wait on an update on a write to, you know, go all the way through to the search index. But
yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly. We wrote this blog post where we were comparing the search capabilities of Postgres, native full-text search, and Elastic, and it went quite big on Hacker News. People can find it on our blog as well. And in that blog, we mentioned that, you know, using Elastic as your primary source of truth for your data is not ideal. And if you go look at the Hacker News comment, you'll see some people that are like, yeah, I did it. You know, big mistake. And so we definitely would not recommend you do that.
Yeah, no, certainly not. But I mean, I think that's one of the cool things, is because also you live there alongside Postgres, it almost is easier to have that strong, consistent model. Like I was actually just, I did some math on Twitter the other day that was, it was nightmarish. I was like, okay, you know, I was looking at two different ways of doing updates to data. I'm like, hey, if I have this data live on record, you know, and I have to update it, it's like, oh, this is suddenly like a bajillion gigabytes, and like the time needed to process that. I mean, it was huge amounts, you know. So much better to just sit close to the source. And then yeah. So with that weak consistency model, do you have like guardrails to say, hey, we should be consistent within, you know, a couple seconds, a couple milliseconds, or like how tunable is that?
So today it's just a toggle, basically, like which one you want to be. We default to strong consistency because that's what we recommend for everyone, unless you know what you're doing, basically.
Yeah.
But afterwards, it's just like, okay, if it's weakly consistent, it's going to depend on your insertion. So if you have, like, if you make some crazy insertions, it might take a long time. Yeah. We trust right now that our customers that are using that feature are, you know, pretty mature in their understanding of how to work with search databases. And so they are capable of working with that in an educated way.
Yeah.
Maybe this is not the way it's going to be forever. Maybe we add guardrails around it, but for now we don't have any.
Yeah, no. I think that probably also speaks to the needs of your customers. I think that's the one thing is you don't necessarily want to build it just because you think it's a good idea. You want to build it because someone's actually asking for it.
Yeah.
I ask because in my own use cases I need that, but yeah, my search use case is a little bit different from most people right now.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah. But so can we talk a little bit about like relevance, like data types, like what I've lived so much in the like Elastic open search ecosystem for way too long now, you know? And there are a lot of things that I take for granted, like different data types. So like do you guys support like n-grams, like you know, those types of different data types? I've said data
Yeah.
types like 30 times.
Yeah, we do. We
Yeah,
do. I'm
yeah.
happy to talk about data types and tokenize and so on. So we do support n-gram tokenizers.
Okay,
We
yeah.
support a wide variety of tokenizers, rejects, multiple languages like Chinese, Japanese, Korean,
Got
you
it.
know, Arabic, so on and so forth. We tokenize every major language. We have tokenizers for every major language in the world now. And likewise for n-grams, you can build some pretty complex search solutions out of rejects or n-grams. As for any yeah, from the data type standpoint, so we map we support all the Postgres standard data types, and we support JSONB. So when customers come from more of a NoSQL or document model like Elastic, they have some familiarity and they can kind of directly ingest this. It makes the adoption curve a lot faster.
Yeah.
We have some support as well for integrating with geospatial. Postgres is very well, perhaps you know, famous or not, depending if you gravitate in those circles, but the geospatial community is quite big and it's very, very centered around Postgres and a specific Postgres extension called PostGIS, which is quite popular. There's jokes going around the geospatial world where whenever there's geospatial conferences, these are just Postgres conferences because everyone uses Postgres as their geospatial database. So anyways, we integrate with that as well. So you can do some geospatial searches with PrairieDB too, which has been like that was requested, I think, like within a week of launching the first version of the product.
That makes a ton of sense because I mean, so much of like search in particular is related to like geospatial, like a lot of things we're searching for, which is kind of weird. That this always like wigs me out. It's just like this disconnect between I'm searching on a digital forum for something that exists physically in the world somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, both for like e-commerce stores, but also for like distribution, like on the back end. Okay, now I've got this order. I need to go fulfill it. Where does this item live in some, you know, regional center?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, geospatial is cool. I've learned a lot more about it through working with some of our users on it. And it's an interesting data model. But yes, we from the data type standpoint, at least so far, or nowadays, there's no we haven't had any type issues with any of our customers. I think we've finished mapping everything and supporting everything. But if not, open
That's
up the GitHub issues and we'll make sure to add it.
I love that mentality too, because that's yeah, there are certain open source projects that it's like you open a GitHub issue and you just never hear back. So it's nice to hear you say it from your own mouth as well. Like, go open an issue. Well, let's talk about it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Please, please, please. This is very important to us. We're a small team, but everyone at our company talks to our users, engages with our users. We're very, very quick to respond, and we learned a lot from hearing the interesting workloads that people have and things that we may not have come across before. And we're usually quite fast. We ship quite quickly. So if you need something, open up an issue, and it's probably going to be a matter of days until it's landing. So definitely don't hesitate.
That's super cool. Actually, let's talk about that versioning and release cycles. Like, where are you guys at with that? Are you using semantic versioning? Are you how are you doing releases?
Yeah, we do semantic versioning. PrairieDB now is on version 0.9.1. So I guess we've gone through 0.9, nine version, nine you know, minor versions. We're close to what I would call a V1, but Rust projects were built in Rust, and Rust projects are famously allergic to calling themselves V1 for a very long time. There's you know, we have people that use it in production on terabyte clusters, some brand names that people would recognize, and it works pretty well. But we're still a little away from calling it V1. I think we will become V1 next year in 2025.
Nice.
Perhaps in, you know, perhaps in the first half. Yeah, we do semantic versioning. You can use PrairieDB in a couple of ways. We ship a Docker image. We also ship a Kubernetes Helm chart. This is what we recommend for people self-hosting it in production. Excuse me. And we also ship pre-built binaries on Debian, Ubuntu, and Red Hat, Enterprise Linux 8 and Red Hat Enterprise Linux 9. So if you go to our GitHub release, you'll see like 60 packages that are built. We ship Postgres 14, 15, and 16 pre-built on Intel and ARM architecture for all of these operating systems, Ubuntu 22, 24, Debian 12, and then Red Hat 8 and 9. So hopefully it's pretty easy to get started and get something going right away.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for building for ARM. I'm just gonna say, I
ARM is
actually,
great.
it is. It's so frustrating. So I, of course, I worked with OpenSearch for a long time, and you cannot run OpenSearch's Docker containers on a Raspberry Pi up to Raspberry Pi 4.
Oh, interesting.
Because OpenSearch, it was built on the Docker image is built on Amazon Linux 2, or someone's going to throw me off on that. It's the most recent Amazon Linux, and it doesn't ARM v7 doesn't support some of the security constructs that are needed for that operating system. I'm like, that just like you've killed your open source users because that's the first place they're going to try it.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's a shame. I wasn't aware of that limitation. That's a shame.
It's a little sad. And I say this because I personally am running Elasticsearch now on a Raspberry Pi in my home, and that's how I'm doing tests, which is hilarious, and it's an anti-practice. You should have, you know, proper support for your tooling, but this is where I am now, so.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I didn't realize it could run on Raspberry Pi.
Oh,
You
yeah.
must be a pretty beefy one.
No, it's well, it's yeah, a little bit. It's a what is it? 8 gig Raspberry Pi with you know the or the compute module 4. So yeah, 8 gigs. But I was ingesting 500 documents a second.
Hey, that's pretty good.
It feels weird, but also I simplify. I have a super simple data model. I was only writing to one index, no replication or anything like that. But yeah, it was fun. But all right, so let's just talk. Like, what are you excited about in PrairieDB right now? Like, what is like new? What should people be looking out for?
Oh, that's a good question. What am I excited about? There's so many things. We are productionizing a lot of stuff on the search front. So our APIs now are pretty stable, which is something that perhaps sounds a little boring, but it's very exciting. Like, make sure things don't change. We're improving our APIs as well on the faceting side, which is exciting. We have a lot of features coming to do concurrent writing to multiple indices, for example, to do indices over joined tables. In Elastic, that's known as kind of the has parent clause or like join between indexes, which is a famously difficult thing to do, but so many of our users request it. They have, you know, data sitting in two different tables and they want to be able to search over both of them without needing to do two separate searches. So for much bigger performance, those are very exciting. There's a couple of other things we're doing on the search front, and we also offer analytical capabilities. So when people use Elastic, they use it for search, but also use it for analytics. And we offer that as well. We have a lot of work that we're doing on the analytics front. We put DuckDB inside Postgres to be able to do really fast analytics and kind of pair it with our full text search. And that's a slightly newer part of the product. So it's not as mature, it's not run on as large production deployments, but it's pretty big. It's going to grow to be a pretty big piece of the product too. The idea is that you know, you build your backend against Postgres, you should also be able to build your search and your user-facing analytics against Postgres, right? Because all of this is just part of your backend. And that's why we do that too. So stay tuned for that over the next couple of months.
That's really interesting. And I will say that has been one of those things that at OpenSearch, I can't tell you how many people that were like, I just want to be able to do joins. And like, I don't think people realize how hard
Yeah,
that
that's
is.
so hard.
Especially like in a tech space where, you know, with the reverse indexes, it just is like incompatible, it feels like. So like open searches, we were trying things with like, I think you can still, you can query Spark through open search and kind of like create this like odd materialized view, which I mean, it was like really scrappy, but like some people were like, I need this.
Yeah. So that is supported in ParadeDB today. We have a lot of customers that come to us from search, from Elasticsearch, from OpenSearch, and they say, I need to do joins. So ParadeDB, the way we do it from an implementation perspective, is you can create a Postgres materialized view at the, you know, that combines a query, you know, fetching from two tables. And we have basic incremental materialized view capabilities to keep your materialized view refreshed in real time, which gives you this, so it behaves like a real table, basically, from that standpoint. And that gives you much better join performance. And then you can create an index on top of this, and the index gets updated in real time as well. So it's a big deal, but it's very difficult from a technical standpoint. It's a very difficult feature. It sounds so easy, right? But like when customers want that, I just want to join tables. What's so hard around it? But it turns out to be a very big feature request. Yeah.
Well, and again, that comes back to also like having the ability to have the data locally. I mean, it just makes, I think, so much smoother, you know, because all the data is, you know, right there and can be accessed really quickly, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to think if I have any other questions. I mean, I have a ton of questions. I mean, well, let's just talk about this real quick. Like, how do you know, like, how people are measuring relevance right now? Like, have people built their own tooling around to measure relevance, or do you guys provide any tooling in that space?
I will say relevance tuning is one of the areas where we perhaps can do the most to improve the product. So we offer ranking functions, for example, right? BM25 ranking functions, right. Of course. People use this to build re-ranking. Usually they build re-ranking themselves with, you know, on top of ParadeDB. This is something that we could offer better. We also offer hybrid scoring functions. If you use vector search and you use pgvector and Postgres, we also combine with this. So pretty much all of the ranking schemes that people will use for working with pgvector, they can use for working with ParadeDB as well, which is which already gets people quite far. But that's that for the most part. There's a lot that we could do there, to be honest. And that's definitely one of the areas I want us to invest more in the next few months.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You're not alone there. I feel like everyone's kind of in the same space where everybody knows there needs to be more like ranking and relevance tooling. But it feels like even from OpenSearch's side, you know, we built search pipelines and there was a lot of work to do there. And then they're like, great, now that we've like built this stuff, you know, only a handful of people use it because only so many people have like the data to say, oh, this search isn't relevant. Let's add this. Let's try this. So that layering would be really interesting with the re-ranking.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one we need to invest more effort into. But you can get quite far with just, you know, sort of rolling your own. But this will be coming in the future where we make that easier for customers.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think, most people, from what I understand and know, do also roll their own. You know, they're building on top of like Haystack or LangChain or, you know, depending on their use case. Of course, I'm like picking the two ones that are like natural language search, because I feel like that's where a lot of the need for like re-ranking comes from. But
yeah, these are common. We get customers that request integration with LangChain and Llama Index and those type of things. So those will be coming for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Philippe, thank you so much for taking time to come on our dinky little show for the sake of search. Thank you all for joining us, and stay tuned for the next episode. I actually don't have a speaker lined up yet, nor do I have timelines, but so thankful that you could join us for this inaugural episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a great time. Excited to follow the show.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you all have a wonderful time searching, and we will catch you next time. Bye-bye.